Okay, wrestling.
Tape two, continuation of interview about wrestling with Shirley Love. So, where was I? It was on the wrestling, right?
Yeah, just starting on the wrestling, how that came about.
Oh, okay. It started, let's see, shall I finish about the national convention?
Sure,
there?
Sure.
Okay. Anyway, as I said earlier, there was nine elected and I was number nine. I got 49,000 votes in the Tri-County area. And this was a pretty good indication of our demographics from the counties. So anyway, I found out I could win and I continued to run, but then I had to run in the respective congressional district. And Fayette at that time was jockeyed around. You only have three, and back then you had six. So you had six different districts. So as they eliminated, they put Fayette in another district. But anyway, I ran and I won. And had a lot of good experiences. For instance, in 1980, the convention was held in New York. It was also held in 1976 in New York. But in 1980, I and two others were chosen to participate in exploiting or raiding or the finer restaurants on Park Avenue. And they had a drum which had 50 states in it. And they had another drum that had 50 celebrities in it. I'm talking about ball players, movie stars, celebrities. So I and this guy was with me from, he was a union man from up north, a delegate. And we were waiting on them to call West Virginia. So they called at West Virginia. And they took in the lottery of the thing and they picked out who the talent was that we was to have lunch with. Well, they called out the name Ruth Weinheimer. Well, I didn't know who Ruth Weinheimer was. Mm-hmm. I was a dumb hillbilly, really. So anyway, he didn't hear the name. And I just picked up on it. I said, Ruth, he said, who did we get, a ball player or a movie star? I said, no, we got somebody named Ruth Weinheimer, I think it was. I asked the lady. Besides, she was another delegate. I said, who did West Virginia get? She said, Ruth Weinheimer. I said, well, who is Ruth Weinheimer? She said, she's a famous therapist. You've probably heard of Dr. Ruth.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, she's a sex therapist. I didn't know that. So here she comes out, and she's a real short lady. She's only about, I don't think she was 4 foot tall, really. She pulled up her socks. She'd have been blindfolded. Anyway, they had a limousine waiting on us to take us to the Seacrest restaurant that was on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. And so we go to the restaurant, and I had a political hat that I gave her that she put on. And we talked to her. I tried to get her to talk about herself, and she tried to get us to talk about ourselves. Mm-hmm. But she told us how she, her parents were annihilated by the Germans in the gas chambers, and how she was smuggled out of Germany through Switzerland to England and then the United States, and how she escaped those gas chambers. They were Jewish people. And anyway, everybody would pass by, they'd say, hi, Dr. Ruth, how are you doing, you know? So, and they had all the press there, Associated Press, United Press International, and others. And one of them was sitting next to our table. But I said to her, I said, Dr. Ruth, I said, you should be running for office. I said, you're more popular than the candidates. And she says, have you not read any of my books? And I said, no, you know. If your horse isn't sick, you don't take it to the vet. That was a mistake right there. So anyway, she says, well, give me a napkin. Are you married? And I said, yes. He said, give me a napkin. So she writes my wife a little note, and I put it in my shirt pocket. I still have it in my album. And so anyway, we have lunch with her, and the reporter came over, and he said, did you enjoy your guest? And I said, yeah. And he said, did you know who she was? I said, no. I know she was, I found out she was a famous therapist. So he liked that, you know. So the next morning, they slide these little tabloids under the hotels where the delegates stay. And this New York Times comes sliding under, and I picked it up. And on page 16, there it had me, picture of me and Dr. Ruth. And the caption was, Dr. Ruth has no hate for love. And the Restaurant Association, which sponsored it. I mean, it went all over these magazines, went all over the United States. It had another picture and another story. It was in color. And one of the restaurant owners here in Oak Hill, he owns the McDonald's. He gave me a copy of it to keep as a souvenir. But then another time I had tickets to the Kathy and Regis show. They were they did a program on ABC, right, which our station was an ABC affiliate. Okay. So we carried the program every morning at 9 o'clock. And I was on the Kathy and Regis show, and I guess my boss got me tickets. Well, I suppose they knew then there was going to be some delegates coming. So when we went in, they put us in a certain place, mm-hmm, as to where the cameraman could get a shot of us. And Regis, he talking to Kathy Lee. And mm-hmm, anyway, said something about, are there any delegates here? They knew there were. So we raised, mm-hmm, our hands, and the camera came around. And he asked us questions about the Big Apple. And at that time, there was a presidential candidate named Charlie Brown from California. Anyway, his name was Brown. I think he's still governor now. Anyway, they wouldn't let him talk at the convention, so Regis kept asking, why won't they let Charlie Brown talk? Mm-hmm. And so I ignored him the first couple of times, and finally he said, come on, tell us why won't they let Charlie talk? I said, well, he talks too much. And I got a big laugh. Like it. So anyway, it was a nice little interview. And from there, the others were, uh-huh, from New York. We went to San Francisco, Chicago, Atlanta, all over the United States, wherever they had the convention, California, Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun.
Cool.
It was, I think, 14 of them. But this year, if I get elected again, it'll make either 14 or 15. That's about 40 years.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, yeah. Let's talk wrestling. So, how did that show come about, and your involvement?
Started. Wrestling got started on the TV station here. Nearby Fayetteville, they have what they call the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Building. It's an auditorium. It holds 4,000 or 5,000 people. And the gentleman there named Bob Kent at that time, he was the general manager. And he had a contract with an association of wrestlers out of Ohio. And wrestling is like, they're almost like a mafia. They have certain groups, and you don't infringe on their territory.
No.
I mean, in other words, if they have Southern West Virginia, no other wrestlers comes in and goes on the air. So anyway, they held the wrestling matches there beginning at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. And the station owner cut a deal with him. He said, look, after you wrestle over there, you come over to my TV station and do some matches, and I'll give you two free plugs as to where you're going to wrestle in the area next week to amplify, you know, get you a better audience and let them know you're coming. So they readily went along with that. And they had some great wrestlers at that time. And I say at that era, compared with what they have now, I mean, now you've got to jump off in the Empire State Building to get. But this was strictly wrestling on a comeback. It had been dormant for years. It wasn't very popular. Okay. In other words, if you attended a wrestling match, it was like a carnival. Mm-hmm. They'd have a wrestler, and he'd take on anybody that was there. It hadn't gained popularity, but when it hit the TV station here, now Channel 3 in Huntington, they rebroadcast some matches that were held in Cincinnati, and some of that infiltrated into the counties up here, mm-hmm. the ones who had better antennas, so to speak, with the rotary and so. So on Saturday night, we started doing the wrestlings at 10 o'clock, at 10:30, beg your pardon, at 10:30, following Gunsmoke. And I know Gunsmoke was on the air 22 years, and we were on the air 23 years. So, and as far as the ratings were concerned, we just had them all. I mean, it was just, it seemed like everybody in the whole darn state watched the Saturday Night Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And they had wrestlers like Gorgeous George, Argentine Rocca, the Sheik, mm-hmm. and those at that time were the most popular wrestlers, Gypsy Joe and Von something, the German uh-huh. wrestler. And so they took it up and would bring the wrestlers over here on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And we started out in the studio, which wasn't too much bigger than this where we're sitting here today. But we got up about 75 seats around and got the ring up, and we'd give them away free to people that would write in. And it got so popular, it's a couple of businessmen in Oak Hill built a auditorium, a skating rink adjacent to the TV station. Okay. And the owner, he had a part in it. He owned maybe a third or half of it, whatever. So somehow somebody didn't pay their bill, and he ended up owning the auditorium. So he converted it over to a facility where the kids could dance, the dance party. You could have banquets, because he had a terrace restaurant, and then the wrestling, and it held 1,001 seats. Wow. That's a lot of people, and usually on Saturday night it would be all to capacity. Wow. And it just came more popular overnight, mm-hmm. and as that book. That book had a lot about it. Mannix Porterfield, who put together that book, he wrote for the Associated Press and different newspapers. Very good at what he does. And so many different funny incidents would happen that went out on the air. In other words, we didn't have a delay on our broadcasting mm-hmm. or to where we could stop it and edit it out. If someone got all fired up, and they usually did. I had to be pretty fast to pull the mic, and a lot of times I wasn't fast enough. Yeah. And that's what made the wrestling show probably as popular, was the interviewing the audience between the different matches and the falls. Mm-hmm. And that's how it became so popular.
Mm-hmm. So how did you learn about wrestling? Did you know anything when you started?
No. This is funny. When I went from radio over to TV, the sports announcer, the sports director for radio who did the football games, he quit and went to Texas, got him a better job. So Mr. Thomas, the boss, you just did what Mr. Thomas told you to do. He was the boss, and you followed his lead. He said, Shirley, you have to do the football games. Well, I never did a football game before. I said, Mr. Thomas, I don't know anything about football other than playing in high school. And he said, well, he said, they all got numbers. And that means the numbers, there's a name. So just follow. So that's what I did. The first game, it had to be horrible. If I had a copy of it, I'd pay $1,000 for it because I – Well, yeah, I did it, number 24 Jones, hands off to number 15, so-and-so, and he hits the center of the line and tackled by number 26. It was horrible. It was just horrible. And the next morning, he chews me out good. He said, you dummy, he said, those numbers, you're not supposed to call their numbers. The numbers are where you get the name and write them down, you know. So anyway, I did about 1,000 more. Well over 1,000 football and basketball games. They sort of became known as the voice of the Red Devils, and they inducted me into the Red Devil Hall of Fame, which that was an honor. I always would go down to the last 10 seconds and still could win, you know, but it couldn't. It was like the little old ram thought he could punch in the hand, punch a hole in the dam, but he had high hopes. I had high hopes, but it made the game more exciting, and people picked up on it, you know.
But wrestlers don't have numbers, so how did you do it?
The wrestling. Now he said to me too. I said, he said, you have to do. When this guy left, Chuck Balding, Charles Balding was his name. Everybody called him Chuck. I said, I don't know anything about wrestling. He said, well, he said, they get an arm lock, or they get a leg lock, or they get a toe hold, or they get a half Nelson and a full Nelson. He said, just wing it. Do it. Whatever they're in, you just announce it that way. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And I asked about the different holds, and that makes me a note. And even if they, if it wasn't right, I'd do it anyway. Nobody knew the difference at that time. But, and I did that. I made that, tried to make that as exciting as the football games, mm-hmm. like as though they was going to kill one another. But right. And a lot of times they'd go out of the ring, and they had ways of bleeding that we'd call in an ambulance once in a while to come and get them because of the door of the auditorium. It had two big doors, and you could drive the hearse right up into the uh-huh. into the studio. So, excuse me. So and they would come up with all kinds of gimmicks. The wrestlers would. You'd think they're going to die laying out on the floor, and but I got used to it. I had a table where the they'd fall out on the table and they'd tear it up every week. And the carpenter, the guy at the station had to put it back together. But the gypsies or the little men. Midgets? Yeah, the midgets. Mm-hmm. When they'd have the midgets there, they'd get out on the desk, and then I'd sort of be nose to them, you know, them standing on the desk. Uh-huh. And like they would jump on my back. And one would jump on the promoter's back, and they'd fight, and naturally they'd pop us in the side of the head once in a while in the process, which was humorous for the crowd. Mm-hmm. It was entertainment. But when we first started, the West Virginia Athletic Association, they formed this in the state. This was something that the legislature created about, I guess it was 1978. They created what they call the West Virginia Athletic Association. So members of that association came to the TV station and told Mr. Thomas that they would be picking the referee and they would be keeping the time and all this stuff. He says, no, we're not going to have any of that. Mm-hmm. They said, well, you're in violation of the law if we don't. And he said, no, not necessarily. So what he did, he went out on the marquee in front of the station, and he changed it from Saturday night wrestling to SAT, SAT, NIT, night wrestling, WRISTLIN. And then before I went on the air, he handed me a disclaimer that said, I'd say, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Saturday Night Wrestling, blah, blah, blah. We have four matches tonight and blah, blah. And I would say the following program is prearranged for your entertainment. So that took it out of the realm of being an athletic event. Mm-hmm. And never had any more problem out of the athletic commission.
Do you remember characters who would insult hillbillies and rednecks, and that was sort of their gimmick?
The what now?
Do you remember there being characters who would insult hillbillies and rednecks?
Yeah, so this one guy, Jan Madrid, he was a past master at getting people fired up. In fact, he would get under my skin sometimes too, because he'd refer to me as a pencil neck, or told me one time if I drank a glass of tomato juice, I'd look like a thermometer, because then I was thin, and it called people underground coal miners, underground farmers, because they dug coal, and stuff like that. Oh, he could make anyone mad. One night, there was a little lady sitting right over from me, and as he got out of the ring, she said something to him, and he took his hand and wiped perspiration off of his forehead and threw it at her, and it hit her right in the face. And she didn't react. She acted like a little school teacher. But I remembered her reaction. And she was first in the line to be interviewed when I, after the fall. And I said to her, and this is one of those nights that you can pull the mic fast enough. I said, I could tell when I was on the air by watching the little red light on the camera, no one else would know I was on the air. So I was watching the camera, the light came on, and I said to her, I said, what do you think of this Jan Madrid? She said, I'd like to smack that SOB right in the mouth. And it went out in the air, you know, and people, ha, ha, ha. But it, you know, that's when the boss would say to me, don't let those people curse on the air. And I said, well, you know, Mr. Thomas, sometimes you just can't control it. He said, yeah, but you lead him into it. So he passed the buck back on me, and a lot of times I did. And uh-huh. Not in that case. I didn't know what she was going to say, because she looked like a little Sunday school teacher. Uh-huh. But there was another time that was very funny. This little boy had a hat on. This is how you can get yourself in a cramp as an announcer and don't know how to get out of it unless you're quick-witted. And this particular time I was, he was about 9 years old, and that's the day of the Davy Crockett, you know, the hats and the movie, the TV show. Davy Crockett, you know, King of the Wild Frontier. But anyway, he had this little hat on with the coontail and everything on it. And I asked him his name. He told me. I asked him where he's from. And I said, man, that's a good-looking hat you have there. And his eyes just shined, you know. And I said, where'd you get it? He says, Grandpa found it in the trash dump. Well, that put me, you know, what can you say? I mean, he was proud of it, and his grandpa found it in the trash dump, too. I said, would you do me a favor? He said, if I can. He said, when you go home tonight, you tell Grandpa, if he finds another one like that, to save it for me, because I want it. So that's about the only thing I could do. But in that little book that was written by Manny Porterfield, it's called A Man Called Shirley, you'll find numerous... You'd find numerous incidents that happened.
Yeah, I remember one where you had asked for ramps on air.
Had the what?
You asked for ramps on air. Wild Leeks, the ramps. You know, the plant ramps that grows wild in the woods.
Oh, ramps.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I Those things smell like a back of a bear going north or south end. Anyway, all I had to do was, if I wanted them, the boys at the station, they liked them. If I ate them, I had to stay away from my wife for at least 3 days, you know. Mm-hmm. I liked them, too, and sometimes I'd eat them.
Yeah.
But she'd keep me out of the house. She said, don't come in. I don't want to, she couldn't stand the smell. But anyway, if those guys would say, Mitch and Rams, love, they'll, somebody bring you one. So I said, you know, I'd like to have a good mess of fresh Rams, you know. Well, the next week, here come three or four bags. We call them pokes, you know. Okay. West Virginia slang, a bag was a poke.
Oh, okay.
So there'd be three big pokes of Rams.
Wow.
So I'd give them to the guys in the that worked at the station. They liked them. Mm-hmm. They'd mix eggs with them and bacon, and mm-hmm. they'd go a lot of go fishing and good to eat on a riverbank.
Yeah.
So anyway, this one Saturday night, somebody brought a big bag, and I had left them. I left them in the studio inadvertently. I didn't think. Somebody set them down, but this you have to remember the auditorium would stay open or stay closed all week, and it would get hot and it would get cold. You know, hot and cold air could the heat would come on, and the next Saturday night when we went across, oh Lord, that's. Studio, it was rank. I didn't want to go in it to announce, but you go in it much less go in to announce wrestling matches. And the people that started coming in, you could see they'd sniff their nose. You know, what am I smelling? But anyway, that's when the boss told me, he said, look, one more time like that, and you're out. Now, whether he meant it or not, I don't know, but I believe he did.
Yeah.
But with friends I worked with, I didn't have to have many enemies. One night they took a bag of the Ramps and put them on the manifold of my automobile. I sold advertising, and they laid them up on the manifold of my automobile. Well, as my motor would get hot, the Ramps would smell. So I'd go out and stop by a merchant, and I'd go in, and everybody said, "What's that smell?" You know. I don't know. It was a Ramps on top of my, where my motor heated up. But anyway, I didn't discover him. I pulled in the service station one day and asked guy. I said, "Check it all for me, will you?" He said, "Yeah." And he said, "Love," says, "what are you doing all these weeds on your manifold?" Then it came to me where that smell was coming from. Then there was three ladies from Intercourse, Pennsylvania, that I had an interview with, which I didn't know there was such a place as Intercourse, Pennsylvania. But the first lady, she brought a lot of laughter from the crowd, you know. And so I got rid of her as fast as I could. The second lady, I said, "Your name?" And she says, "So-and-so." And I said, "Where are you from, man?" She says, "Oh, I'm from Intercourse, too." Well, that didn't help matters, a little louder laughter. So the third lady, this is where I'd like to have had a video of it. The third lady, she steps up, and I look at her, and I just shake my head up and down. And she shook her head up and down. Yes, I am from. So I gave her whatever I got her and got away from. Then there was a big old tall boy in the back of the room, and I asked him if I could interview him on the next round. He said, "Yeah." It was from Eccles, West Virginia, but I was afraid if I'd ask him where his name was. You can imagine what he might have said, and that I would just closed up.
Who were some of the local West Virginia wrestlers?
What now?
The local West Virginia wrestlers.
Yeah, a lot of West Virginia wrestlers. There was one called, he's a coal miner. He called himself Black Diamond. And then this Chief Black Eagle, he wore his headdress, and he'd go on the warpath, and when he went on the warpath, he'd really sock those guys around the ring, you know. And there was a guy named Podunovac, Steve Podunovac from, I think he was from down Logan, in Logan, West Virginia. And There was Pat Clancy. He was a local one, and he was good. He was one of the smaller wrestlers, well built, but in height about 5'5". But he was a local wrestler, and from Boone County they had the Scuffling Hillbillies. They wore overall pants. So there's a picture in there of them where they're all laid out on the floor. And that night we called the ambulance and took them to the hospital because they were bleeding so bad from being socked around by whoever their opponent was. It was a tag team match.
So were they good guys or bad guys?
They were good guys. Yeah, they were the good guys. And but the bad guys put it on them that night. And the local mortician, Joe Tyree Funeral Home, he loved Fort Scully Ambulance because he got a lot of publicity out of it because back then they didn't have emergency vehicles like they have now. They used the hearses. They used the hearse if they went to your house to pick up a body or you were sick to take you to the hospital. They put you in the hearse. Uh-huh. And so he liked that. He'd get some publicity out of it.
Let's see. Oh, who's still around? Are there any of those West Virginia wrestlers still around?
The only one that the last one I had any contact with was the gentleman you mentioned a moment ago.
Richie?
Yeah, Richie Acevedo. Uh-huh. Richie's father, he was a Cuban assassin. And he stopped by and saw me. It's been about a couple of years ago. He stopped by my house, and it was he was still wrestling. Uh-huh. And one they called Gene Madrid, he was about 70 years old. And he was still wrestling in Canada. Wow. And, I mean, he looked like he was 30 as far as, you know, body build. And, but those guys kept themselves in good shape. Mm-hmm. They did athletic things that the ordinary person couldn't do. I mean, you know, jumping off of a turnbuckle, hitting one of the wrestlers and grabbing him by the neck. I mean, you and I would kill each other if that happened to us. But, And popular, the lady wrestlers were, and the midgets probably were the most popular as far as wrestlers for extracurricular activity about the wrestling was concerned. Mm-hmm. And you had one lady called Slave Girl Mula. Right. I think her picture may be in this. Uh-huh. And she went on to train wrestlers until she was, I think, 72 years old, she made it a business. Uh-huh. And, but it was one night, a guy, this is true. One night, I always parked my car to where I could get to it because we had a drive-in theater, just a drive-in where you order stuff and mm-hmm. cars would park and sometimes I'd get tangled up, so I parked my car in a certain spot so I could get out. And I was walking to my car, and this is after the wrestling was over. And I was walking to my car, and I passed this car, and there's something sticking out of it. And I noticed it wasn't a stick, and it looked like a gun barrel, which it was. And here sat a guy inside there with a shotgun, single-barrel shotgun, and as he had come out of the auditorium, one of the wrestlers had spit on him or threw perspiration on him mm-hmm. or told him, you know, I'll beat you up or whatever. Uh-huh. Well, this old boy, he wasn't afraid of nobody. Mm-hmm. And it was his first day of squirrel season, and he had his shotgun in his car. And he was sitting there with it sticking out. Partial, about that much out of the window. And I knew him, and I'll think his first name in a minute. And I said, what are you doing there? He said, I'm waiting on that son of a gun to come out of there. He said, I'm going to show him he ain't going to throw it, spit in my face no more. I said, no, you can't do that. I said, you go to jail. I said, those boys, they'll all get in the same car and drive uptown together. I said, don't do that. Biggest mistake you can make in your life. Mm-hmm. I said, let's just don't do that. And I said, I'll tell you what, you put that shotgun away. You let me break that shotgun down. And I said, I'll give you tickets to wrestling from now on, as long as you live. But I don't want you shooting one of these guys, because this could cause you big trouble and bad publicity for the station as well.
Right.
And so finally I talked him into giving me the shotgun. Mm. So I broke it down in three pieces. Uh-huh. And I put it in the back seat of his car under the seat. And asked him if he would leave when I left. And he pulled out and he went to town. So he didn't go back, but I don't know what would have happened. I knew the guy would, he would have shot him, yeah, or probably, maybe not killed him, but he would have, yeah, pretty well burned him, depending on what kind of shot he had in the shell he had in the gun. Yeah. But he had a shell in the gun. I took it out too. But
those
things happened like, yeah, that, you know. Another guy got in the ring one time with a knife, and the guy that's sort of the bouncer, I always had a bouncer beside of me, mm-hmm, usually one of my buddies. Well, in this case, it was our artist at the TV station, John, we called him. His name was Cinero. We called him Cinnamon Roll. So John had to jump in the ring and take the knife away from the guy. In the process, John cut his hand bad and had four or five stitches. It was one of those, I still have it at home. I kept it as a souvenir. It's a hawkbill. Uh-huh. They call it a hawkbill knife.
Oh, wow.
And nice little souvenir to remember things by. But if he had got to the wrestler, because he was serious.
Right.
He wouldn't have gotten in the ring if he hadn't have been. But. And another time, they dressed up a lady who worked in the restaurant of the TV Lanes. And they put lipstick on her, made her look like a rogue, and old hat, and gave her a fire, a pocketbook. And they had it loaded down with, I don't know, rocks or what. Uh-huh. But anyway, and everybody was in on it except me. So they had the wrestler would come over in front of me in the ring, and he'd say something about the bad guy. Well, she was standing behind me, and she came by, and she'd swing it, and instead of hitting the wrestler, she hit me.
Oh, no.
Well, after three or four times, I couldn't stand anymore, man. I didn't want to get out of there myself or get her out some way. Well, there was a lady across on the other side. She was watching. And she came over and she said, Shirley, you want me to slap that bee? And I said, yes, ma'am. Well, the promoter, he was in on it, so he heard it. So they hustled her out real quick, because that lady would have done exactly. And another time, a lady threw a shoe, and it hit another lady in the face on the other side of the ring. She threw the shoe at the wrestler, went all the way across, and hit this lady right in the face. And the lady didn't react. She just was very calm, picked the shoe up, put it in her lap, and watched the other side. And she could tell who did the shoe. She went around and the lady didn't have but one shoe on. And she said to the lady, she says, honey, is this your shoe? And she says, yeah, thank you. And she went whap. You could hear it. You could hear it in Oakville. I mean, she's popped that leather on the side of her face like crazy. But those things were little things that happened that, you know, made the show funny. As far as the announcer is concerned, because I didn't have too many funny things to laugh about.
Do you think people, hold on. Do you think people thought it was real, or they just got carried away with it?
No, they thought it was real, and they got carried away with it too. But particularly elderly people, they liked it. It gave them a, I don't know. Let's put it this way. If you went to a psychiatrist Well, they'd come into the station, and you'd catch their eye, and they would be people that you had to almost catch their eye and keep their eye to nod hello or how are you or hi. So they come into the studio, and they're very reserved. They get their seat, and they just sit there, you know, until the wrestling match has started. Mm-hmm. And after about 15 minutes, I mean, they're moving a little bit. Another 15 minutes, they're, you know. And another 15 minutes, they're on their feet with you know good rascal. And another 15 minutes, they're ready to get in there and fight him, you know. And when they left, they would be just yap, 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 yap. So I always wondered how long it would take a psychiatrist to get out of those people what an hour and a half did at the TV station with that Saturday Night Wrestling.
So do you think they were like working out their anger? You think they were working out their anger and stress?
Yeah, I think so. At home and you know, somebody with 10 kids and a mother, and she comes over to watch the wrestling. I think it gave her elderly people that are all cooped up and, you know.
Right, right.
It just gave them a way to let off steam, you know. And at home, too. I had a lady, there was a preacher at our station on radio, and I worked radio and TV, too. And this particular day, I was working radios, and I had to introduce this program. It was called The Good News Hour, Reverend Ernest Barley, he was his name. And there was a lady that was in the little studio that he was preaching from. She came over and she said, "Mr. Love, could I bring my grandfather over and introduce him to you? He wants to see you." And I said, "Sure." So he comes over and tells me who he is, and I shake hands with him. And I think I gave him a record or something. We had a lot of goodies we gave away all the time at the station. I gave him maybe a 45. And anyway, the little girl, his daughter or granddaughter, said, "Says Grandpa, says tell Shirley about the TV set." He said, "No, he didn't want to talk." She said, "Well, if you don't tell him, I'm going to tell him." She says, "Grandpa was watching the wrestling a couple of weeks ago, and the referee, he couldn't get the referee's attention to see the bad guy rubbing the whatever it was in the good guy's eyes." And said every time Grandpa would say, "Now there he is," he said the referee would turn his head. So Grandpa went in the back room and got the shotgun and shot the television set.
Oh, no.
And she said, "I told him, Grandpa, you didn't hurt that referee." And he said, "Well, you don't see him anymore, do you?" So that's the things like that happen. Another incident when I was campaigning for state senate, I was up in a little place called Hackers Valley. Mm-hmm. Hackers Valley is a little hamlet in the, I would say, the northern part of Webster County. Mm-hmm. It's about as far north as you can go without heading south again.
Yeah.
So anyway, I admired those people up there because they were going to close their school, and all the people in the community got together and bought material, rebuilt the school, and it's still running. But anyway, there was an old abandoned farmhouse, beautiful, like an antebellum type home. And you could tell it was old, and there had been a lot of activity in its time. But it had fields around it, and it had brushing. I like to hunt rabbits, and I have a rabbit dog. I like to chase rabbits. And I wanted to find out who owned it to get my rabbit dog and come over rabbit hunt sometime. So I told the lady, I said, "Ma'am," I said, that had to be a beautiful farm one time. She said, "Well, you relate to that farm." I said, "Well, how would I relate to the farm?" She said, "Well, when she was a little girl and her brother was a little boy, the fellow who owned, we'll call him Mr. Brown owned the farm, and he had the only television in the valley. And he would give her and her brother 50 cents to follow the antenna to the top of the mountain, because if a leaf fell on it, you'd get snow, and you couldn't see television. Or if the wind blew and it kept blowing, you had to stabilize it, or you got wind. So they were in charge of the antenna. And she said they would folks in the community would come up, and they would each bring a dish, like chicken and green beans, mashed potatoes, or whatever. And he said they had three tables, and two of them they would put on the porch and one in the yard, and they would have, as she described it, dinner on the ground. That's a West Virginia slang. That they'd have dinner on the ground, and she said she had her little spot over in the corner where she could see the TV set, and they'd all watch Saturday Night Wrestling. And she said there'd be the porch would be full, and where they could peek in the windows and then the inside too. But it was sort of a heartwarming story, you know. And I've heard several tales like that where people actually, I think, Channel 4 invented cable television, because like that gentleman there in Hackers Valley, he would have a daughter that would build a house, and she would hook onto his antenna, and then maybe she would have a cousin or something in another house, and so it became cable. It was cable TV, really. I suppose that's how it got started.
Yeah, so one thing I saw in the book is that there was a labor dispute by the wrestlers. Will you tell me about that?
Yeah, one time the wrestlers went on strike. They wanted more money, and the promoter wouldn't give it to them. So they went on strike, and here they are. The folks have already bought their ticket, got their seats, and we don't have any wrestlers. So I go in the back, and the promoter says, "What are we going to do?" He says, "You have to give their money back." And I said, "You don't know Mr. Thomas." If I say yes, we got to give everyone the money back. And he wouldn't have that kind of change back there, because they only charge like 50 cents or a dollar. I said he wouldn't have enough change for 50 cent pieces. And I said he'd hang me out to dry, and you guys too. He said, "Well, what are we going to do?" I said, "Well, buddy of mine is an auxiliary policeman, and he just may could put on a show with Dan Madrid, the promoter. If Madrid didn't hurt him and you had an extra pair of trunks, we could get a little dialogue going as to he's my bouncer and so-and-so." And his name was Bob Mason. He's very popular among the United Mine Workers. He was president of Subdistrict 3, which was located in nearby Rainale. And like I say, he was a very active United Mine Worker official. So I talked to Bob. I said, "Bob, we're in a real predicament here tonight." I said, "The promoter says he'll give you $100. He'll buy you a new shirt if you need it. And also, we had to be in on it too, me and my cohort, Sandy Higgins, who worked at WAY, he went on to become the head man of the United Press International in Germany, of the European Theater. He was personally escorted out of Iraq by Hussein. And he was a good guy. He worked there. I remember he asked me, would I loan him enough money one day to buy a book? And I said, "Sure, Sandy." And what it was How to Speak German. And he took that book and he learned to speak German. And he got that job in Heidelberg, Germany. And he was smart enough, and later on he became head of the bureau. And he wrote several articles for different magazines, different things. But anyway, back to the auxiliary policeman. His name was Bob Mason. And I said, Bob, all you got to do is just play with him. He'll play with you. He won't hurt you. I guarantee he won't hurt you for anything. He said, yeah. He said, I've been needing a new shirt. So he agreed to do it. So the dialogue went something like this. He came out and he was sitting beside with me. And Madrid, the promoter, the bad guy, comes out and he says, who's he? I said, that's my bouncer. And he said, well, who's he going to bounce? I said, he's going to bounce you if you don't behave yourself. And he said, he ain't going to bounce nobody. So he gives him a push, you know. And then he comes back with a push. And I said, hey, hold on, fellas. We got matches lined up here to wrestle tonight. I said, you guys trying to put one on yourself here. And I said, you're not afraid of this guy, are you, Bob? Mm-hmm. He said, no, I'm not afraid of him. I said, you heard what he said, and you insulted him first. I said, would you want to get in the ring with him, Bob? And he said, I'm not afraid to get in the ring with him. Well, I said, well, maybe we could arrange it. I said, you got another set of trunks back there in Madrid, yeah? So one thing led to another. Anyway, they had the three matches, uh-huh. And the first match, we disqualified Madrid. So the second match, Madrid won. So then the third match, that was the deciding one. Right. That's where we was in a pickle. We had to do something. Uh-huh. So what happened was Adam Toney, who was the manager of the TV Lanes Auditorium, and he was a member of the legislature at that time, we took razors and cut our shirts, uh-huh. so they would come off real easy.
Yeah.
And Madrid, at the end of the match, when he was supposed to have lost, uh-huh. but he won, that's when he got into it with us, with me as an announcer, and the other two guys were backing me up, and he grabs our shirts and pulls them off. But the funny part was, Tony, the manager of the TV Lanes, he had a sweatshirt on under his regular shirt. Madrid was shaking and his sweatshirt wouldn't break. Uh-huh. And so he got under the ring, crawled to the other side and left us all. But Sandy and I, we continued and he tore our shirts off and there we are, we may be in here, uh-huh. bare shirt and everything. So I say to Sandy, I said, you know, Sandy, we come out here and try to be as dignified as we can and professionally as we can do a wrestling match. And mm-hmm. here we have to put up with guys like him. I said, look at you and look at me. I mean, we had our bare, you know, bare chest. I said, I don't know about you, Sandy, but I said, I'm going home. I'm going to quit. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, me too. And I said, well, folks, that's it for the Saturday Night Wrestling. We'll see you again next Saturday night. But we got all of our commercials in. Didn't lose a commercial one. Uh-huh. And they enjoyed that more, it seemed, than if they had had the regular matches that we had lined up for one fall match or two falls. Okay.
So did was it local wrestlers who went on strike, or was it guys on – was it local wrestlers who went on strike, or was it guys on the circuit?
You want to call them the syndicate, but okay. they were the wrestlers out of Columbus, Ohio,
okay.
and they had this section of West Virginia in their territory, so to speak.
Okay.
And
did they get their money?
Oh, they did next week, because they found out that, you know, things could go on without them. And they didn't want no more of that.
But they didn't get their raise.
They didn't get it that night. No.
Oh, okay.
No, we got it for new shirts, and uh-huh. me and Sandy and Adam all got a new shirt.
Yeah.
And the guy got $100. He gave me $100 for putting on the. I had to put on the show.
Too, yeah. But the next night, next time, did they get more money?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they came back. They settled their little grievance.
Got it.
But the funny part about it, this Bob Mason, his wife was a war bride. She was from Germany, and she spoke German fluently. Uh-huh. And she was a nice lady, and I liked her. I saw her a couple of 3 days in the local grocery store. Uh-huh. And I said, Mrs. Mason, how did you like your husband wrestling? And, oh, she, you know, she started speaking German. She was calling me every SOB you could think of in German. And I said, hold on, you know. Uh-huh. I said, I don't speak German. I said, the only thing I know is Guten Morgen and Guten Morgen.
Right.
And Wiedersehen. I said, be kind to me a minute, Miss Mason. She said, if I was a man, she starts speaking English. Then she said, I'll whip you all over the store. And she said, I'm still going to whip him, talking about Bob, her husband. But he had a hard time for a long time after that. But she nailed me good.
So you don't, because they didn't take numbers, you don't really know how many people would watch on television?
Well, we know this. Our rating was like, for the news, if we had a 25 over Bluefield or Channel 8, I mean, this was high. I mean, we were high. It was like, if I remember, it was like 80s. It was Nielsen. It was almost high as it could go, because we were on every cable TV in Southern West Virginia that you could be on. I mean, the cable system, a lot of privately owned cable systems then. Mm-hmm. And they didn't dare not put them on. To go with network or some other programming. Uh-huh. I mean, they wanted their people, it was on their cable, they wanted wrestling, they wanted to see it.
So it was cable? You had to pay extra for it, or it was just every?
Okay, well, the people who had it paid extra for it. You know, if you lived in, say, Grundy, Virginia, mm-hmm. had that on their cable. Well,
okay.
You know, you paid that company that had the cable system.
Yeah, okay.
The TV station didn't have to pay anything.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they got our programming for free because the FCC had arranged it that way. All cable companies could hook on.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we solicited a lot of cable companies to put us on for news and stuff like that,
yeah.
So it would amplify our ratings on Nielsen and Arbitron,
okay.
when they sent out the county books,
yeah.
and things like that.
So anyone who had cable in Southern West Virginia, they had this show.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about the Black Diamond wrestler?
Okay, he was a coal miner. He was just an ordinary guy. They got with some of these wrestlers that rented an apartment close to them, and they liked him, and he was very athletic, so to speak. You know, you could tell he played football when he was younger before he worked in the mines,
uh-huh.
and they taught him the different holes and different, and he was very, very good. I mean, he almost looked professional,
uh-huh.
and so they integrated him into their group when they couldn't get some of the top wrestlers out of Ohio,
mm-hmm.
then they'd call Black Diamond, and a lot of them wrestled under a mask.
Uh-huh. Okay. And he was from Becklea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Becklea. Then there was a justice of the peace. His name was Burl Holoyd, and he lived at Cabin Creek, and he was a justice of the peace, but he always wrestled with a mask on his face, you know. He didn't show himself because it was close enough. Cabin Creek was close enough to Oak Hill that, you know, people would have. I guess he just didn't want them to know that he was he was a wrestler, but
and
he was good.
Did he have a persona?
Hmm?
Did he have a persona?
I'm sorry.
A wrestling persona?
Oh yeah, yeah.
What
yeah.
was his wrestling name?
Let me think. I think it was a skull.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they had. Those guys with the mask, they had all kinds of funny names.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think he was the skull.
Cool.
Yeah. And then a lot of times, too, you'd have your referee, They'd be short on wrestlers, and the referee, he would referee, and then he'd go back like the last match, and he'd put on a mask and he'd wrestle. And most of the referees were good wrestlers too.
Were the referees from this area?
The referees were. One was called Loder Lowry. He was a policeman in Charleston, and he came up and he would referee the matches, and then sometimes the last match of the thing he had to go back if it was short, and he would wrestle. So that was. Uh-huh. But it was quite a weekend when.
Yeah, I just have two more questions. Do you go see wrestling now at all?
No. No, they inducted me into the Wrestlers Hall of Fame, which it was quite an honor.
What is that, the WWE Hall of Fame? Or
I don't know. I have a picture. I don't have any in the other album. I have a picture of it. Okay. But it's... I don't know whether it's the same group as Genie or the Assassin's Son.
Oh yeah, Richie. Yeah.
Richie, I don't know whether it's his group.
Oh, I bet ASW maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, they had a big match over in Bluefield, and they invited me over, and gave me a plaque. I still have it at home.
That's cool. What do you? Why do you think it was so popular? And you know, especially in West Virginia, why are people so into wrestling?
Well, one thing, it had violence to it, you know. it's like, why is deer hunting so popular in West Virginia, squirrel hunting? I don't know. It's just the people like violence, whether it's true or not. You know, if you're sitting here in a restaurant and there's a fight outside. Somebody says, fight. Everybody gets up and goes out and watches it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So basically I don't know what the word for it is, but it's a way of life.
Yeah.
You know, they just like violence. They just like to see somebody hit somebody in the jaw, and then that one come back and retaliate. And being wrestlers too, and bouncing off the ring, and and the different techniques that they used, it keeps one occupied continuously for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's why they like it. Elderly folks, again, it's like I told you earlier, I think that gave them tension. And I always told them on Saturday night, be sure and go to church and Sunday school tomorrow morning. And I've had several of them tell me, well, I know it's all right, you know, to go be, because you always remind me to go to church and Sunday school. And and I thought that was quite neat. I did that for 23 years. That was my last byline going off.
But it's also contained violence, so it's safe. And, you know, they can know who's going to win and cheer for the good guy. So they have some control over the violence.
That's true. And then they would leave it continuing to next week.
Right.
You know, this guy would be maybe disqualified, and he'd say, you be back here next week, and I'll tear your head off, see. So, and he'd be back next week.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go at it, but it'd draw a crowd, and it'd
keep
the audience on TV fired up too, waiting for Saturday night.
And when you say, you know, violence is a way of life here, you mean like it's a hard place, or what do you mean by that?
Well, maybe I didn't phrase it just right. Violence is a way of life. You have a tendency of so many people coming there, and they come for one reason, and that's the violence of the show. One sucking another one in the jaw,
right.
And whether you're bleeding real blood or some other kind, that's what they like it, and they come back.
Yeah.
If I mean, it doesn't mean they're bad people. It's
right.
just
yeah.
It's like you and I right now, if there's a big fight out there, you and I probably go out and watch it.
Yeah, yeah. It's drama.
And you'd say, did you see that guy with that right hook, you know? But that's and this is God and country and 12-gauge shotguns and 30-06 high-powered rifles, because it used to be on the first day of squirrel season in this area, this area, it would sound like Vietnam. I mean, there's a bang, 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 bang everywhere. Now, that has subsided, I've noticed, in the last few years, squirrel hunting. But deer season is still as popular or more popular. Mm-hmm. You have upwards of 300,000 deer hunters in the woods the first day of deer season and throughout Thanksgiving week. And it's probably the biggest family reunion in the United States. Because here you have uncles and cousins and coming in from other states, and they're all cramped in a little place like this with a pot-belly stove to keep them warm and a coal stove or a Coleman heater to cook breakfast with, and they don't care what it tastes like. They eat it.
Right.
And I'm one of those freaks. I mean, I like it too. My grandchildren the same way.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share?
No, other than I interviewed a lot of celebrities on there. One time I interviewed Jay Rockefeller.
On the wrestling show?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was campaigning in this area, and one of the guys told him to hang around until Saturday night. And he would, and I think it was Mr. Tony who was in the House of Delegates, politically himself. And sure enough, here he is, big, tall guy. I ask him, hey, you having a good time? Well, it's different, let's put it that way. I remember him saying, I said, do you ever wrestle? He said, that's a little bit in college, not much. I mean, he's throwing it in there, yeah, which I doubt if he did.
Yeah.
But, having him on, you know, it created, well, surely had Jay Rockefeller. This was before he was governor. This is when he was running. Uh-huh. Was running for governor.
But he probably knew a lot of people were watching, so he wanted to.
He knew the statistics. He knew the statistics on it, because we were in the cable, what they call Capital Cable in Kanawha County, which covered all of Charleston and below, at St. Albans. And we had a terrific audience.
Wow.
It was, but I remember interviewing Jay. And the first time I ever met him, I was doing a football game on radio, WAY in Fayetteville. And I was sitting on top of a concession stand. And, you know, at halftime, you have a lull between the football game. You got about 15, 20 minutes there that unless you got somebody to talk to, you got nothing going on. So I told my spotter, who was Kim James, to find me someone to talk to. So he gets down off the ladder, off the top, and he hollers back up, you want to talk to Jay Rockefeller? Well, at that time, Jay Rockefeller was Secretary of State. And I didn't know Jay Rockefeller from Flint. So he comes up, he sits down, and we talk football, and he had big long legs sticking up in the air. And it was an interesting interview. And,
who else was on? Any other celebrities on the wrestling show?
Yeah, we had a lot of we had a lot of them. I can't remember that. Like I say, if one was in town and he was Secretary of State, running for Secretary of State, I think John Perdue, one time I interviewed him. But I've interviewed several of mine. I just can't remember their names.
Do you ever remember the Morris brothers having a show on WOAY?
The Morris brother from Clay County?
Yep.
Yeah. In fact, I have a picture. I have a picture card in my album.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I remember their theme song.
What was their theme song?
It says, "All
Soldier's Joy?
Yeah, this is.
I think John's told me that's.
I'll see you in the morning. Oh. It's sort of bluegrass. They were good.
John's still around.
And they would have every week. I would say a bushel basket full, but a box. They would have a box full of mail. But they sang the old bluegrass, the old bluegrass traditional West Virginia songs. I mean, songs that were handed down from generation to generation. Mm-hmm. That was their type of singing.
Yeah.
Some would call it cornball, you know. But to me, I liked it because they had a lot of bluegrass. In fact, there were several people in Clay County that had a lot of talent. Trying to think of another group from Clay County. One thing I remember about Clay County, there was a young girl down there named Shirley Love.
Really?
Yeah. One time I was doing the dance party, and Clay County High School was up there, and she was one of them I interviewed, and I asked her her name, and she said Shirley Love. And I said, "Come on, don't kid me." But it really was.
John is still around. John Morris is still around.
He's still playing. I guess it was his father. Maybe he was a carpenter or had a construction company or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know they were both teachers, but they might have done some other things too. Did they have other people on?
I'm trying to think of the other guy. There was one guy that sang with
David and John, and then maybe.
I got a picture of him, like I say. I saved
the
picture.
Maybe his name was John, too. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But out of all of this, I got selected to the West Virginia Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Right.
That was an honor.
Well, you have a really great radio and TV voice.
Thank you. That's a compliment. I just got over pneumonia a couple weeks ago, so it took a little... Give me a little frog here and there in my throat. Yeah,
sound good.
I appreciate it.
Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, but thank you so much.
I got plenty of time. Anything else you want to talk about, I got time.
Should probably hit the road back to Charleston.
Now, this is going to be a magazine?
So it's in a book I'm writing.
In a book, huh?
And then we have our... It'll probably go into our archive at West Virginia Humanities Council. That will be at WVU.
Will you sell me one so I can send me one so I can buy it?
A book?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I definitely will. Yeah. And then I can send you the recording if you want.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Yeah.
If you would like, I have some pictures. Of I don't know whether you could get one out of here since it's on wrestling.
I mean, I have a copy of that book.
Huh?
I have a copy of that book.
Do you?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. Now, here's that lady I was telling you about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
These are all auxiliary policemen. Here's the guy that wrestled. Right there.
Oh, wow.
Right back at Bob Mace. But I was skinny then. This is the guy... The Madrid guy.
So were Jan and Jean Madrid?
Yeah, Jan and Jean.
They were brothers?
Yeah, they wrestled as brothers. They weren't really brothers, though.
Yeah.
But everybody thought they were brothers, but they weren't. But people still buying this book.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it.
And I passed a lot of good legislation.
Nice.